Welcome to Crypto Talk. I'm your host, Steve Cooper, and remember, I'm only as hip as my guests. And I have to tell you, my guest today, I ran into him a while ago, but years ago, we're talking like late 80s, maybe early 90s. I'm not even sure what year it was. We did a comedy gig back east in my hometown area, and it was an Andy Scarpati gig. And back then, he was wearing like, I don't know if it was like a pink blazer or a leopard blazer, and he had this big, crazy hair. Now, you understand, people, back in the day, I had the hair, okay? Now, my friend said it was a mullet. It wasn't a mullet. It was gelled. I sort of had like the Richard Marx, Dave Coulier cut going, okay? And I think him, like me now, we're both follically challenged. It's all gone. And I think it may have been from using 10X or Dippity-Doo or whatever. And I think we had so much damn hair care product in the late 80s that the shit just disappeared after a while. And luckily for both of us, he has a very good looking head. I have a very good looking head. We both look good. Shay, we actually have the same haircut. My guy, Jason Silver.
Yes, today I'm actually letting my hair grow. I usually have it a closer cut, but my agent wants a hair cut. I'd rather a photo with this haircut. She wants it with a little more fuzzier.
Yeah, so now, okay.
So I'm actually growing it out this week to have some photos done.
Do you razor it or do you just buzz it? When you actually
I use a razor.
Okay, see, now how's that? I'm afraid. I'm legally blind in one eye, so I'm afraid I'll
use the
parts.
Expensive one. I buy the real expensive one.
Is it a hand thing, or how do you?
I do it with a razor, you know, in the shower.
How do you know when it's that you?
You feel it. Okay. You can feel it, and it's the same razor I use for my face.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Okay, so that's funny, but I remember that working at that party.
I'm assuming it was a burgundy tuxedo jacket. And you're mixing it up with the ones I wore on television probably, too. You're mixing it up, which everybody does. I had a burgundy tuxedo jacket that was shiny. I had a purple lamé jacket. I had a silver lamé jacket. I had a cow jacket, a leopard jacket, a tiger.
I think it was a leopard jacket.
Tiger jacket. And it was not in the 90s. That was the 80s.
Yeah, late 80s. Okay, like
it would have been 80s, yeah. And I had my hair spiked up, and I had pieces and things sewn on. And
yeah, I just remember that. It was probably 88. Like probably because I got out of college in 86.
Had I gone to New York every once a year, and I'd go to do a string of gigs.
Well, yeah, this was the Andy Scarpati.
Was it a terrible restaurant? I don't even know who Andy Garcia. I don't even remember.
He used to have like the comedy cabarets, and they had a bunch of them, and they were good. They were good shows. I mean, I think we may have done a one nighter, which sort of was crappy in a crappy restaurant. But it's funny because I remember you, and it's funny because now
I remember when I was doing in New York in a restaurant where they wouldn't even let us talk.
Okay.
It was so crazy.
So now you've been doing comedy for a long time. Now, where are you originally from?
I was born in New York in the Bronx. I've been doing comedy for 30 years this year. I've been doing it openly gay for 20 years this year. So my two anniversaries are like a month apart. And I've been acting since I was a baby boy. I mean, I started pursuing my career when I was 16. I started studying when I was 14. And I did my first play when I was 8.
Now, what was the acting bug and comedy bug in your household? How did you come on to the scene?
I was just obsessed with television as a kid.
What were some of the shows you used to be
obsessed
with?
Oh, God. What did I love? Certainly the Brady Bunch and the Partridge Family. Okay. But I think, it's like, the Waltons. Family.
I love Family. Chrissy McNichol Gary Frank.
Yeah,
and that,
those kind of dramas. Some of the TV movies at the time, That Certain Summer, you know, Lizzie Borden with Elizabeth Montgomery. So many wonderful films of that time that were done that sort of changed. What I love the idea is to being able to go into a movie theater. I remember going to see Funny Girl when I was so little and driving my Schwinn to the Pan Pacific Theater in Los Angeles and going in a theater, seeing this woman that is probably the Lady Gaga of her time, Barbara Streisand, seeing her in a movie playing a character that was sort of funny and talented and yet sad on the inside and happy on the outside and seemed like me that was an out Jew, you know, and at that time people didn't say they were Jewish. It just was not, you know, it only had been maybe 20 years since the Holocaust, and it was it sort of changed the way I felt when I came out of that room. Okay. And I think the idea to have that kind of power was amazing to me as an artist. And then as a little gay kid that was bullied and beat up and treated badly, I think that, being able to make people laugh and having that kind of control.
Well, it's weird because you say that as being a gay little kid getting bullied and beat up, it's very different. I know, like, when I was in college, okay, there was gay guys who went to college. There was gay men, but no one was openly gay back then. And it was, like, almost like you said, it was like your boy.
Well,
I
remember in 95, I did the Gay Pride in Los Angeles. I was in a car, and on the car it said Jason Stewart Comedy Central's special Out There. And I remember Leah Delaria, who was a popular comedian at the time, and she had come over to me and she started laughing. She said, "Why didn't you come out years ago?" And I looked at her and I just paused for a second while we were waiting in the parade to go into the parade. And I said, "I didn't know I had the privilege to do that. I didn't know that I had, it never occurred to me that I had that choice."
Right.
And I think of it as a privilege to be able to be who you are, because I stand on the shoulders of so many extraordinary, talented people that went way before me, that, you know, who lost their careers. And, you know, Jim Nabors recently got married.
I know.
His 80s. And I remember when he was just accused of, I guess he was friends with Rock Hudson, and Rock Hudson was known for having boys' parties at his house. And when I say boys, it's men, but we call each other boys, gay guys. And his whole career ended. His Gomer Pyle was over, and he had a variety show, and it ended because of that.
It's crazy.
His career ended. And I think he went into real estate and moved to, you know, Hawaii, and his whole life ended. And at that time, it was pretty awful.
So,
you know.
Yeah, so that's the one thing for you. Now, getting bullied, and is that where you came up with your comedy instinct? I mean, when did you...
I think so. It's hard to remember. I came from a very funny family. So when I saw Silver Lining Playbook, I thought, mental illness, that's I guess my whole family's mental, because that's the way they act all the time. I think it's a lot of things. Certainly being bullied, you know, changed the course of who I was as a person. You know, I used to have fantasies as a kid about taking people to court.
Okay.
You know, and making them pay for what they had done to me.
And now you could do it with the People's Court and all those crappy judge shows. But these days, I'm waiting to see
how many years, you know, come on. How many years?
Right. So
you have to go back.
You started doing comedy. When did you start doing comedy? When did you sit down and go, "I'm going to get on
what
stage"?
What year?
Yeah, and how did you find out how to
get it?
Well,
I did it the first time in 82 at the Comedy Store. And Danny, Montoya? Was it Danny? He's an actor. He had a class with Robert Aguayo, and they ripped me apart so bad I didn't go on stage for another 2 years.
Okay, what made
so
you...
my real start was in 84 at the Comedy Store, going on after Damon Wayans.
Okay, well, that's...
And little did I know that night, meeting him and after a series of driving him home all the time, that's how in 2001 I became a recurring character on his sitcom, My Wife and Kids.
Okay.
You know.
See, it's just weird how it works, because you were in when everyone was breaking out. And so now what did you sit there and go, "Okay, I want to try stand-up"? You knew you wanted to be acting from the
I St. never Barbara. Really wanted to do stand-up. I had a manager at the time, Catherine James, who since passed away, who said, "You're so funny. Everybody's doing stand-up. You should do stand-up so we can invite people to come and see you." So I never saw stand-up as a craft. I saw it as a showcase. And then I did it for 3 years all over town and got good at it. And then I got on Merv Griffin and Star Search.
Okay.
And all of a sudden, it became a launching pad for me. And then I became the traffic school comedian, because I was one of the first group of people.
Explain that to them.
Well, in Los Angeles in the 80s, there was these traffic schools that were having comedians teach the class. And I did that for around 9 months before I got fired.
What did you get fired for?
Not teaching, really, and just being funny and showing up late. And, you know, I was crazy. You know, I was a baby boy, and I was, you know, 20s and very young, you know.
So now you were doing stand-up. Now, how did you formulate your act? I mean, it was a little crazy.
At the time, in those years, I think I was doing my impression of a stand-up comic.
Okay.
You know, I didn't, you know, being a gay person, it was never really comfortable talking about myself. So I talked a lot being a fat kid, and I wasn't fat, and talking about my crazy Jewish family, which I still do. And I talked a little bit about pop culture, and I think I did that for a while. And then I became better at it, you realize you have to use part of yourself. It became difficult. And I did that for like 10 years.
Okay. Now, were you going out on the road? Were you getting work?
Oh, yeah. At the three-year mark, I did my first paid job at the Comedy Haven in Palm Springs. And from there, I went to doing one-nighters and started working on the road. I opened for Shirley Hemphill in Oklahoma. It was one of my first big gigs. And I went on to do that. I could barely get arrested as an actor,
okay,
other than doing free plays and maybe some part in something once a year because I work so hard.
Now, did you really want to act, or were you sitting there going, I'll do stand-up?
It's always about acting. It still is, in a sense. Though I do appreciate my semi-celebrity from stand-up and my notoriety from it and my ability to make money with it, I think of myself as an actor who does comedy and who produces and who writes a little, and you know,
so
acting is my roots.
Okay, well, here's a question I want to ask you. I was thinking about this today. Now, you
am I supposed to be funnier on this?
No, it's we just talk.
Oh, okay.
No, it's believe me, that's my thing. My thing is no bits. I don't want comics.
Oh, okay. I forgot to ask you that. So
no,
I don't. Sure.
I'm not going to go. Hey, I don't, because you know what? You can hear bits anywhere. I don't want to hear bits.
Go to jasonstewart.com, STUART, and you can see all my clips of my comedy and everything else you need to know. Social network me, lick me, taste me, friend me, bite me, lick, you know, taste me.
Do everything.
Tweet me, twat me.
No. Okay, so now you came out, you said, on stage 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. Now, today it seems like there's a lot of, there's gay comedy night, there's stuff like that, and all these different things. What was it like for you that first, you know, 10 years you did comedy where you really, you couldn't come out on stage? Did it frustrate you, or what was it?
No, because I'm used to being treated as a second class citizen. It's where I come from.
Okay.
So that's the way I was raised. I'm from a group of people, of a certain age of people who that's what I was used to. I'm not used to the idea of being treated as an equal. I knew that from a very young age that I wouldn't have that privilege as most other people do in this country, and I still don't. So you get used to the idea, if somebody doesn't tell you, you know, if somebody's always feeding you oatmeal, you don't know there's steak around. You know? And until I started to evolve as a human being and get more self-esteem as a person, I don't think that I ever thought about those things.
Okay, now
it just wasn't done.
Okay, yeah, I was going to say it wasn't done. Now, but the acts you work with, they knew you were gay, right? But
I can't speak for them. I can only speak for my own experience, and I didn't start to come out to people until I had been in the business probably when I started on the road. You know, after being around 5 years on the road, I started to come out to some people, and of course, people knew it. You know, the joke was I used to wear leopard pants and a zebra jacket, and I would dance in a circle because I didn't want anybody to know I was gay. You know, it's that old Liberace thing, you know, where, you know, you're trying to hide, you can't hit a moving target. It was very difficult to tour. I was a very popular middle act. I did it for 10 years, and I started to headline at the end of that in B-rooms and one-nighters. And what had happened, I think, was I was running out of things to talk about to become a true headliner.
Okay.
And I grew up in the nightclubs. I didn't grow up in the performance art spaces or, you know, in the colleges or any of that stuff. I didn't do that until years later. I grew up in the comedy clubs. So you had to, first thing is you had to be funny. Second thing is you had to do the time. And the third thing is you have to sell the tickets. So I had, around 1990, I had done a movie called Kindergarten Cop.
Okay.
Which is a really big hit. I had a small part as a hairdresser.
Now, how did you get that? How did that come apart? Were you auditioning, or did someone know you? Or how?
I used to make rounds, and I had met a casting director, Jackie Birch, who worked for Michael Chinich, who was big, and that's how I got in on that.
Now, what was that like? Was that your first? I mean, it was a big
hit. My second studio movie. The first one was Cross My Heart with Martin Short, which no one saw. And it was the first time ever to be in a big hit. So that sort of gave me a little bump.
Okay.
Especially when I was on the road. You know, people, you know, would go, Jason Stewart from Kindergarten Cop, you know. And then I I don't remember what year it was. I did Vegas Vacation a couple years later and some popular shows. And then when I came out in 93, all of a sudden there was a way to market me. And nobody had done it. So I was quite an original. In that sense, they had Scott Kennedy, who was doing a little bit of touring, and Bob Smith with the Funny Gay Males. So there were other gay men doing it, but I think, and Bob has sort of scolded me on this because he said he was the first comedian to do mainstream comedy clubs as an openly gay man, which is true. But my first is I was the one to be a really big success at it.
Okay.
He was doing a show with three comics. They were doing a gay night or a gay show. I was in a mainstream comedy club headlining, and I'm not patting myself on the back because if it weren't for people like Bob and Scott Kennedy and his deceased lover at the time, who were touring in all gay shows. I wasn't doing that. I was just a headliner who happened to be gay, and I would headline the whole week.
Right.
And some of them did that. And then there was Suzanne Westenhofer, who did some clubs at the time. And I don't think there were any women who were gay doing it that I can remember. Those were the three that were doing it at the time that were doing it in mainstream clubs. But I would do it, and I would sell out. And I think it was a combination of that I had done it for 10 years before, so I understood the climate and how to speak to people. Whereas I think a lot of the other gay comics were doing specifically to gay people.
Right. You were doing comedy that it was comedy. It just happens that you were gay.
Right.
You could talk
so,
about
but
that.
But yet the setups for my stuff, I think I was a little more universal. But I still talked about being gay, so it wasn't that. I think there was a certain universality that I had learned from being on the road for 10 years. And doing that they didn't have, because they had been more New York centric, or Scott was Southern, so there was that, and he had been caught, you know, so different. They're all wonderful comics, and Scott is, you know, a brilliant mainstream comic now, and had been touring in all the Iraq and everything, and he'd been doing that, and Bob has worked all over the country and so forth, and I've worked with both of them, and they're both hysterically funny, but they were doing, it was a little different.
Okay.
You know, than I was doing. I was sort of more in the mainstream of what's going on, and I would sell out.
Okay.
And I had three different times of very successful times in nightclubs, two in the 90s and one in the early 2000s.
Which were?
Of selling out shows and doing really well.
Now, what made you decide to come out and then translate at the stage? Was there a certain factor that you just, you know,
I think it was so depressing and so sad that I couldn't be myself. And as I was getting older, you know, not older, as I was, you know, ending my 20s, you know, it was so difficult to write and not be myself. And also, you'd go to a club, and I'd want to go to a gay club afterwards, and you guys would all want to go out and meet girls, and I couldn't go anywhere because I couldn't ask anybody. It was so expensive for me to take a cab, and I'd have to, you know, couldn't ask anybody to drive me because I didn't want them to know, and I was afraid I was going to get fired. And I did get fired a couple times for being gay.
Now, how did that happen? I mean, how does that happen? What happened?
No, it's happened recently.
Okay, now how does that happen? Do they not know you're gay?
A TV show on a network on ABC. It happened in a club in Texas. It happened in a club in Ohio. It happened at a recent Indian casino.
What's their reason? Because you are a gay act. You say that. I mean, so
oh, it's pretty obvious when you look at me on the net.
But did they not know? I mean, what was the reason?
I think that you know, the last one, I think, is they just didn't look me up.
Okay.
And then someone did at the last minute, and then that was it.
Now, does that totally piss you off? I mean,
saddens me.
Okay.
You know, then it pisses me off. And people still think of me as limited. I'm like a woman comic or a variety act, or they don't think of me as a regular nightclub comic, a lot of the bookers.
Well, it's funny because I remember when I worked with you at the Downtown Comedy Club, you can tell, and it's the only thing, you can tell someone who's been on the road because you're very good with the crowd. And that's the thing, like some people just suck with the crowd.
Well, I'm known for being sort of a Joan Rivers, Don Rickles-esque kind of comedian. Those are my favorite kind of comics, and I think that has sort of gotten into me. That I have that kind. I like the show to seem like I'm doing the show just for you.
Right.
I'm not like a Wendy Liebman where I'll do a set thing and she's got, you know, she sticks to the script. I don't do that.
Right.
I'm much more improvisational.
No, I tell you, you're very good with the crowd. And that's what you can tell, a person who's doing comedy for a while is very good with the crowd. Some people just
I sort of trick them into thinking, listening to me.
Right. But the thing also is, I think a lot of times, I think most comics will say this, a lot of times when we mess with the crowd or talk to the crowd, some of our answers are already bits we've done and you can roll that. But mm-hmm. for like you, because you've been doing it for a while, everyone thinks, oh my God, this guy's just doing 40 minutes off the top of his head, mm-hmm. which must just goes to your honing your
Well, it's my gift as an actor and as a comedian. I'm not a Shakespearean actor. I'm not the most brilliant comic that ever lived, but what I'm really good at is improv. I just did a film for James Franco's company that he produced and wrote called Holy Land. And I play this hoarder guy. And, you know, I practically improvise my whole part. And I've done that a couple times in movies. Not a couple, a lot, honestly. And probably half the independent films I've done, I've rewrote.
So you go in, you get the audition, they like you. And then you sit there, and they know what you're doing, of course. Because if you're an improv, you're going to suck. They'd be like,
I try to be really kind and sly about it, I have to say.
Like how?
I called the woman on the phone. I was doing this film, and I said, hey, I read it. And I didn't... They wanted me to, I replaced somebody. So I went in the next day to do it. So there was really very little time to learn it and work on it. And I got there and I said, hey, do you mind if I, you know, tweak this a little and make it a little funnier? And she's, I said, I do stand up, which is sort of, you know, and she said, sure. She said, I want it to be sort of improv-y. So fine. But she said, but I want to do the, you know, one way, the way it's written. So we got to the set, we were on location at this guy who was a hoarder. And we were outside of this. I mean, the house, before you even get into the house, there was piles of stuff everywhere. So I sort of went in character, you know, and sort of asked the guy his name was Bob the Hoarder. I said, could I borrow your coat and your hat? And I started wearing his stuff, and he had this dog, and it kept barking. And Bob couldn't tell when we were filming when we weren't. And I would start improvising with the guy that was playing. I played this hoarder, he played the council person trying to get me out of my house. And this guy who sort of looked like James Franco, and I did these scenes together. And I said, "And let's just improvise." And we were talking, and then we started doing it. And there was real no. It was very sort of. We sort of eased into it, and we never really did the dialogue.
Okay.
But and she
great.
Loved it.
Yeah.
And after we did it, what was interesting is the DP, which is the camera person, just blurted out screaming and laughing after the director yelled cut. You know,
what's that noise? Is your phone ringing?
Oh, it's my phone.
I don't know. I was like, what? I'm like, is something screwed up? That's fine. I told you the table
it's
was sensitive.
It's this kid that I mentor, and he keeps calling me when I'm doing my show.
But that's cool though. Now, okay, well, the improvising now. That
so
was...
so that part was, you know, done that way, and it worked out really well. And now, and Bob, who was the guy whose house it was, I kept calling him, And I told him during the shoot, while we were filming, I said, Bob, quiet, just like that, because he wouldn't stop talking, and his dog kept running in and out of the shot. So I made the dog my dog.
Okay.
In it, so I added him, and I fed him his lunch and everything.
Well, see, that's cool, and it's good because you do work a lot, and you have a lot of.
Well, the more you work, the more confidence you have. I like working a lot.
Yeah, I mean, it's a
great
thing. I
did 6 films last year.
Okay.
Well, and the more you work, the more confident you get in it, and the better you get at your craft. I mean, I think of it as a craft and as an art, and I think of myself as an artist, and I love it. I love that part about myself. I think of myself more as an actor than I do a comedian, but I know I'm very skilled at it.
Okay, well, I think we crossed those bridges at certain times. When you back when you came out, now did you have it planned? You were going to come out on a certain night on stage?
Yeah.
I
came out on the Geraldo show in 93.
Okay, now that was, did you do stand-up or you just sat down?
We all did stand-up on the show. It was called Unconventional Comedians. It was myself, Sandy Church, a little person comedian, Kathy Buckley, a hearing impaired comedian, Paul Mooney, an angry black man comedian, supposedly, Sheila Kaye, a woman who'd lost a lot of weight comedian, and me. And the show was sort of developed around me, honestly.
So how did they find you? I mean, how did that all come about?
We sent a press release.
So
me and whoever I was working with at the time.
So you weren't out in the clubs yet?
No.
But you sent a press release to Geraldo and said, I'm going to come out?
Geraldo, Donahue, Oprah, all the daytime shows.
And what was your angle? I'm coming out in the show?
Yes.
Or what was that?
I'm coming out.
Now, yeah. That was
93.
No one
did that. It was before Ellen or Neil or Ricky or Jody or anybody who just came out. Yeah.
So now how did they decide... Okay.
They jumped on it. People wanted to do it.
Now, why'd you pick Geraldo?
He was the most popular show at the time. It was right below Oprah and Donahue. Donahue was the most popular one in 93.
Okay.
And then Oprah, and then Geraldo, and then Sally. Sally, I think, had called, too.
Now, were you very nervous when you did it?
I was a wreck.
Okay, now, take the people through the days before that.
It was frightening because it hadn't been done. Some people told me not to do it.
Why? What was your reasoning?
Because they thought it would hurt my career and hurt me. And I think it did in some senses.
Okay.
You know, but I don't think I would be anywhere where I am now without it. I don't think I'd be have the ability to develop my talent. You know, when you're in the closet, I always use the symbolicness of being in a closet. You're standing on the shoes, you're behind the leather jacket, you got hat boxes and shit in the way, and every once in a while someone opens the door and a light flashes in your eyes, and then they shut the light off and slam the door in your face, and that's how you make all your decisions.
Okay. I mean, that's a great scenario. I haven't heard like that, but it is great. It's true. It's like the old. Yeah. It's like, okay.
And I don't think anybody who's in the closet really makes very good decisions most of the time because it's not clear.
Now, so you're doing a Geraldo show. Did you do your stand up first and then you sat down, or do you remember?
They interviewed us. We all did a couple minutes of stand up and then we did a Q&A with the audience. And I remember there was one woman in the audience that sort of looked like Shelley Winters. And she said, "Why do you guys have to touch each other in public?" And I said, "Well, why do you guys have to, have sex in public, but the kind of thing straight people do in public now is way past anything that most gay people do.
Right.
You guys are very flamboyant about who you are."
See, that's what always cracks me up. I'll be honest. And for my thing is, you know what? A person who's like a total South Philly or Brooklyn Guido is much more over the top than a gay man. I mean, it's just so, because they're just like, and it's, well, like, it's so machismo.
I think mostly gay people are much more respectful of straight people's lifestyle than you are of us.
Okay.
I would never profess to go into a straight club with a boyfriend and kiss and hug him and grab his ass and touch him inappropriately, where I've seen straight people do that in gay clubs all the time.
That makes no sense.
Not really. I mean, I think you have much more self-esteem than we do. And it's also, you guys are obsessed with us and we're not obsessed with you.
Right.
You're obsessed with what we do, what we want. I don't think I hear gay people ever talk about straight people very much when we're together. We don't talk about you guys. Where you guys, it seems, are very interested in us.
Okay,
that's always my experience and my impression.
Okay, no,
that's not everybody's, but that's just mine.
Well, I think it also goes back to people always sitting there going, "Oh, I wonder if they're gay." Who cares? For me, it's like, I don't care. It's like, I don't care who does what. I mean, that's
oh,
my
I
thing.
Do.
See, I don't care. I don't care if someone's gay.
Because there's such a small amount of people that I can go out with. I mean, compared to you guys, you got 90%. That's why you don't care.
Okay.
We only have 10, so we're trying to figure it out. For me,
it's like when people sit there, "I wonder if that guy's gay." For me, it doesn't make a difference. It's like, you sit, these people sit there and it's like, who cares? I'm like, "Oh, this person's gay in Hollywood." Who cares? Todd Glass came out. You know what? It doesn't make a difference. He was always a great comic. We thought he may have been gay years ago.
Did you really see? I never knew because he stayed clear of me.
Well, no, the thing is about him was,
he barely ever, he'd say hello to me and that was it. Well, and most closeted gay guys in our business, the comedy business, not actors. Actors is different, but most closeted gay guys have kept a distance from me.
Well, it's weird. It's funny because one of my friends who worked with him said, he goes, years ago, he goes, "I did a show with Todd." And he said, "I'll be honest, there was a ton of great looking guys. I said, either he has really handsome friends or he's gay. No one gave a crap. No one even thought about it because we went on stage. He was so damn funny. It wasn't, he was great with the crowd. And for us, it was like, we didn't
care. He been talking about it in his act? I don't know.
I haven't seen his act for a while. He probably
I'm hearing that he has not.
No, because I think he
has to figure it out. Because, by being in the closet for so long, I don't think he has developed that side of himself.
And he has such a following from the older act that it's a matter of, I don't know if it translates, how people...
Oh, it always does.
Okay.
I think it's just, I think it always does. And there's a couple really famous people that are gay, that are comedians, that we all know about. And I'm mouthing people's names, and they just, I think they might have a harder time. But certain women comedians, and I won't say their names, who are closeted, I think some of them would have a hard time because they've lied so much. And I think that lesbians are such great fans, much better than gay men for gay men. Lesbians really love lesbians, and gay men really love other women.
Okay.
So to make a transition when you get older, when all of a sudden the work dries up in certain areas for people and they want to start going to other areas, it might be harder for certain comedians because they've never developed that that audience. And you've sort of insulted them by being closeted in this day and age. It's like Anderson Cooper, Everybody knew that Anderson and Cooper and Jodie Foster were gay. They were on the cover of Out magazine 5 years ago holding a mask in front of each other. And what happened is a serious journalist like Anderson Cooper all of a sudden became a joke. And then he puts out a tweet, "I'm gay, no big deal." And then all of a sudden it's done. And Jodie right. Foster comes and does this poetic speech on the Golden Globes.
What did you think of that speech?
I thought that it was extraordinary that she is the first movie star to come out ever.
She is, yeah, star. I
mean. And you could tell she was frightened. Her last two films have not done well, Carnage and Beaver. How you can be a lesbian and direct a film called The Beaver is beyond me. You know, what was she thinking? With Mel Gibson.
I know.
Oh, dear God. You know, you're looking for trouble. That's, you know, though I got to say, I saw the movie.
Any good?
I loved it.
Okay, because it's one of those things.
I just thought it was such a, it's about depression.
Okay.
And it's a wonderful film. Just wonderful. And she, he's so good in it. I hate to say, you know, and people say he's anti-Semitic, he's this. I say he's an alcoholic and he has a very bad alcohol problem. And they say, well, people say what you really say when you're drunk. I don't know that. I think people are just out of control when they're drunk and they do things they wouldn't necessarily do in real life, you know. I don't know. I try to judge that harshly seems awful, though I will make some jokes about him. And Jodie Foster, I thought this speech was poetic. I mean, I certainly wish, of course, she would have been comfortable saying that she's gay. But, and she did say it. I mean, she said she came out years ago when she was a young girl to all the people that she loved and people knew, you know, in her life. And so, you know, she's doing the best that she can
right.
at this moment.
Now, as an actor.
In time.
Okay, sorry to interrupt you, but as an actor. Okay, and you act, you've been in, as I said, it's IMDb people, Jason Stewart, it's S-T-U-A-R-T. There's 100 credits, okay? People, that's damn, that's not him being himself. That's 100. That's kick-ass. I'm going to say, that's awesome. I love when I see stuff like that. I go, wow. It's a, but the thing is, you've constantly worked. Now, as an actor, because you've done comedy, you've done drama, right?
Uh-huh.
Now, what, as an actor, how do you watch movies? I mean, are you someone, is a snob? You go, oh, I could have done it.
I'm a total snob.
Okay, now
I really
explain
am.
That.
I just, because I love film, and I love theater, and I love television, and I'm really much more interested. I don't watch a lot of comedy. I love what comedy's brought for me. I love that I'm able to make people laugh. I love doing the shows. I love everything around it, except I don't like to watch it that much. It's not an art form that I love as much because there's so much limitation to it. You know, this is what I always say, is that I had a fan email me and they said, God, Jason, you're so funny. I just want to, you know, be a comedian. What's your advice? And I said, well, who do you want to make laugh? And he said, everybody. I said, oh, honey, do you know everybody?
Right.
Have you met them? Because I have. And a lot of them, I don't really want to make them laugh. You know, so that's your job, is to make people laugh. So, which means that you have to do whatever you do to the audience doesn't, your audience doesn't always come to you. The people you want, you know, I think of somebody like Larry the Cable Guy, and I don't know what kind of person he is.
Very nice guy. I met him before,
but
he was laughing.
You know, his sense of humor, all the old jokes, him and, you know, Foxworthy and that whole, you know, dumb joke crowd. And that's what we call it in the business, with all due respect, not a judgment, because dumb jokes are fun. But, and people love dumb jokes. And the kid that I mentor is 25. He loves dumb jokes.
Okay.
I don't, as an audience. There's a lot of people that do. There's a style for that. And it's fun and it's light and it's silly. And so you, if you, you, you will garner that audience that is not well-read, that is not interested in art, that is not interested in depth. I'm more interested in that stuff. And I'm a major independent film fan. My favorite film last year was Quartet.
Okay.
I don't usually like films about people under 40 most of the time. You know, I'm probably a bit of a snob. My favorite TV shows are things like Enlightened or Nurse Jackie, or I was obsessed with Kevin Spacey's new show, House of Cards.
I heard that. I have Netflix streaming. I heard some of them.
Now, so good. I was obsessed with Homeland. See, I binge watched those shows in a week, each of them.
Have you watched The Americans?
I'm starting.
It's good.
It is.
I
got to say, the problem with the show for me is the two leads.
Okay, you don't like them?
It's not that I don't like them. They're not, and they're both really great actors. But they're so pretty
right.
that they're distracting and they're not interesting enough.
Well, the thing, yeah.
As actors. Well, when you got someone like Margot Markendale coming in and she pops in and she's, you know, effing brilliant actress. and I just adore her. And you have some of these other actors that pop in. It's just, it's harder for people, you know, it's like, and they're also both under 30, I mean, under 40 rather.
Okay.
And I think, like, you know, I remember when Jessica Lange started to get older, and she did, when in her early 40s, she did Blue Skies, which she won the Oscar for, and she was brilliant. You know, she just, you know, when she started getting older, she started getting more interesting.
Right.
And, you know, and it's harder. You know, you look at Jennifer Lawrence, who just won the Oscar. Great job in this movie, Silver Lining Playbook. 10 years too young for the part. Did a great job. And somebody said to her, do you think that winning the Oscar at 22, you think that, you know, where do you go from here? You know, do you think you've peaked? And she looks at me, she goes, well, I hadn't thought of it. I just, you know, and I said, I hope not. You know, it's the night she wins the Oscar. Oh God, guess it's not going to work out for you. But it is pretty hard, you know, when you peak at such a young age to compete with yourself, because that's what happens. I mean, it happened, you think of Streisand, she sort of peaked in her 30s. And then she became a director, and then she in her 40s and 50s. And then, you know, then she went back to doing concerts because, you know, all of a sudden the persona was so big that people would not let her do other things. And I think she got scared. And you think certain artists who you really wanted to see do more work, and they, you know, we don't let them. I mean, few people are allowed to have the Dustin Hoffman, Meryl Streep career. You know, my two favorite actors.
Are they your two favorite?
Oh, God, Dustin Hoffman. There's nobody better.
It's so funny because I remember, you know, it's even now, I mean, he's just the same. I mean, it's great. He's always been consistent. I mean, he always does well.
You mean the characters he plays?
No, him. Just him. Like, he just, and then he goes in. I mean, some of his characters are somewhat the same. I mean, I'm going to say, like, Ratso Rizzo and from The Graduate, the inflection is very much the same.
Yeah, but come on, Ratso Rizzo and the character in The Graduate?
That was great. No,
completely they're different characters.
But their voices are very, you know.
I disagree completely.
Okay.
Completely. You go from Ratso Rizzo, I'll do it from The Graduate to The Midnight Cowboy to Marathon Man to Kramer versus Kramer to Tootsie to Rain Man to Wag the Dog to.
Did you like Little Big Man?
Oh yeah,
wasn't he great?
He was great, but that kind of style, that film was very theatrical. I don't think it would work now.
I guess a lot of things would work. So now, what are some of your favorite movies ever? Because you are an actor.
Well, first I would say Ordinary People.
Okay, which Timothy Hutton was so young, and he's someone also his career changed a lot.
Yeah, he went to television and became a very big TV star.
And it's great. It's Leverage is a good show, but for a while he didn't act a lot.
No, he worked all the time. He just didn't work in anything that was
okay.
You look at his IMDb; he worked consistently.
Okay,
but in independent film, and he didn't have the. You know, he didn't have the career that people thought he would have, but he still worked. I mean, that was an amazing feat, and he's in his 50s now.
What are some of the other favorite movies of yours?
Certainly films. Dances with Wolves really, really, something about that was so spiritual for me. The idea of seeing a whole group of people that I didn't know anything about 25 years ago or 23 years ago in a film and saying, hey, look what we've done in this country. That film sort of blew me away. And then the other film, the baseball film.
Bull Durham?
No, the other one.
The Natural?
Not The Natural. The one that Kevin Costner did. Oh, God.
Oh, A Field of Dreams.
Field of Dreams blew me away.
Okay.
Because those two films I just loved at that time. And I'm not the biggest Kevin Costner fan. I like him. I think he's a good actor. He doesn't blow me away. I if you go by actor, Shampoo is one of my favorite movies.
Warren Beatty's great.
Which is a very Bonnie and Clyde is one of my favorite movies. A film that John Sayles did called Passion Fish is one of my favorite, with McDonough and who's on Crime.
Mary McDonald.
McDonald, who's on Major Crimes now, and Alfre Woodard. I just love that movie. I love it so much. Just crazy. I have to say, I love Yentl.
Okay.
And because it's a fable. It's a romantic film that's about. It's so gay to me because it's about being. There's a song called "Look at How He Looks at Me." Will someone ever look at me that way? You know, and that idea that you fall in love with somebody that is unavailable to you was so touching to me. Lenny, which is a Bob Fosse film, is one of my favorite all-time movies with Dustin Hoffman. Oh, just heaven.
Now, were you a Lenny Bruce fan as a comic, or were you just...
I didn't know him until that film.
Okay.
Scorsese's film, Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore, which is one of his more obscure films, and New York, New York.
Okay.
Which people think of it as Liza Minnelli and music. It's really about an abusive man, and it's about wife abuse. It's funny, I was watching it night before last, part of it on TV, when I just turned the TV on. I was watching one of my TiVo shows, and it ended, and it turned it on, it was on, and I watched it for like an hour. It's about wife. It's about being, you know. There was another film that just popped out of my head. There's so many that I just love. There's a gay themed film about AIDS called Longtime Companion
with Bruce Davidson, right?
Yeah, just one of the most extraordinary films. Brokeback Mountain is almost anything Ang Lee has done. Sense and Sensibility, The Ice Storm, all these. I mean, he turns, you know, I think he's going to do Cleopatra with Angelina Jolie.
Okay.
Gia,
you were in that.
Yeah, I had a little part in it.
Now,
but
did that shoot in Philadelphia?
No, it shot here in Los Angeles.
Okay, because I know it took place in Philadelphia. She's from
man.
What was that like? Because, I mean, she was very young. She was not known.
Well, Michael Christopher was the director-writer, and I remember going into the audition, and I got that because of stand-up, because he had seen me. I did Broadway twice at the Town Hall Theater. I did two different benefits, one for the Gay Games and one with Joan Rivers for the 25th anniversary special. He had been there for it, and he saw me, and I came in, and he wanted me in the movie, and I didn't know that until later, and I played one of her agents, and he had written the Pulitzer Prize winning play The Shadow Box, which I don't know if anybody remembers. It was directed for television with Joanne Woodward and Christopher Plummer and Valerie Harper and James Broderick, and it's one of my favorite plays. It's about cancer. And it almost seems like it's about AIDS. And it was done in 1976. And the movie never really, it really shouldn't have been made for television, because it's such a movie. And I'd like to see it again. It was so brilliant. And he had directed this. So the idea that I was in something that he directed just completely, excuse me, completely blown me away, that I was getting to work with him. And I remember him making me feel like I was the star of the movie.
Okay.
And it was a great working experience for me. And Angelina Jolie, she was in my scene. They actually cut her out of the scene that I was in.
Oh, really?
And I remember her saying to me, God, I don't know if I should be doing this movie. And I looked at her, I said, are you kidding me? This is going to change your whole life. And I remember we talked for a minute. Then we were at a screening at the Writers Guild. And I remember she walked from one side of the room to the other to say hello to me.
That's cool.
I was blown away. This is before she was... I was blown away by that. Only one other time had that happened to me.
What was that?
Rosie O'Donnell.
And now, how did you know? Did you do stand-up spotlight with her?
No, I never got on any of her shows, and I always thought it was because I was gay and she didn't want to be associated with me. But she since has hired me, and so supportive. Probably one of the most supportive people I've ever met in show business. So many backing people's movies and shows and this and helping people get jobs and everything. And her cruises were just, you know, it was just all about being supportive of people in our community.
Now, did you go on any of those cruises?
I performed on one of them. Yeah.
What was that like? It was like being
On a Broadway show.
Well, tell the people that are listening what the cruise.
Our family cruises were Rosie O'Donnell and her wife at the time, Kelly O'Donnell, had these cruises for gay people and their families. So they would bring on their kids. And most gay cruises are about sexuality and dating and romance, like, you know, like straight people's cruises. So this was the first time they did a cruise where they were to bring their family. So all these gay couples would bring their moms or their dads, or they'd bring their kids, or they'd bring their aunts and uncles. And it was sort of crazy, you know. And God, the one I was on, Sidney Lauper was on, Kathy Griffin. Audrey McDonald, Seth Sedensky. I mean, the amount of Broadway people that were on were just, and I was nobody.
How did you get on it? What happened with it?
I knew her, and my agent called and said, I'd like to do the show. And I remember I'd gone to see her and Harvey Fierstein on Broadway doing Fiddler on the Roof. It was in the late 2000s, and she was on Broadway. She's been on Broadway like four times.
Okay.
She did Seussical, Grease, of course. This one, and I think she did something, Fiddler on the Roof. She played the Golda, you know, Do You Love Me? Do You Love Me? The two of them with the voices, you know. I thought it was sort of great to see two openly gay people playing a couple on Broadway.
Right,
and they were terrific. And I went backstage, and I remember I was standing on stage. I said to the security guard in New York, I said, I know Rosie, tell her that Jason Stewart's here. And he goes, yeah, right. And I'm sitting there with my agent, my stand-up agent came with me, and he made me wait there. And she comes out and gives me this big bear hug. And she says, why did you come in and why didn't you call? Because in New York, you're apparently supposed to just call and just, they arrange. I didn't know that. It's okay. Not like that in Los Angeles. So she was, and the guy looks at me like, oh, I guess he really does know her. You know, and she came out and hugged me. And then I went to go see her on, oh, I saw her off Broadway in Love. That's the other show she did called Love, Lost and What I Wore, which is the Nora Ephron play that is done, that's a reading. It's about mothers and daughters, and it's done with drawings of women's clothes, and it's done from this book. If you ever see it coming to your town, you should really go see it. It's great for, you know, mothers and sons or mothers and daughters about our relationships with our mom, and she was so good in it. I mean, I think Rosie is somebody that's really, I think she's a fabulous actress, and we just... you know, because her personality is so big, you know, she did that movie and people made fun, but I thought she was brilliant, Driving on the Bus with My Sister.
I haven't seen it.
Where she played this mentally challenged gal, and she played the gay mom on Will and Grace, and she's played the beaten mom on Queer as Folk, and she's done a lot of stuff that people have just sort of passed over. She also played the shrink in this movie called America about adoption, which she co-wrote, which sort of was on Lifetime and sort of came and went, and she was so good in it, I thought.
Well, I think a lot of people also think of her as a stand-up or as a talk show host.
Yeah.
So they don't really sit there and go, it's not like you see Letterman, you know, Letterman makes fun of him being on, you know, in Cabin Boy. You don't, a lot of times you don't think, it's a different thought process, I think, with people.
She's really, I think, extraordinary. Maybe, hopefully, as the years go on and she gets out of the public eye a little, people will let her act in different things. I mean, look at Monique and Precious. I mean, I had done, the year before, I had done Comics Unleashed with her. You know, we all knew her from the Parkers, this sort of kooky sitcom, you know, that was over the top. And then you see her in this extraordinary performance that just is, I mean... I just think that we think less of people, and I sometimes like to think more. I think that we limit people so much. Oh, they can't do this, or this is what they do, and I don't find that.
Right.
It's not my experience of most people.
Now, you were saying you have a mentor. You're mentoring someone. How did that come about?
I mentor, 7 years ago, I started with LifeWorks, which is LifeWorksLA.org, which is an organization that mentors gay kids between the ages of 12 and 24, and I started mentoring kids. I mentored two kids there. And then these other two kids sort of came into my life, these two straight kids. One's a musician and one's an actor. So I started mentoring them. It just sort of happens that it's coming to my life. I guess maybe when I started my tour called I'm the Daddy and I Have Candy a couple of years ago, and I started, I don't know, it just sort of happened. I don't have children because I have nice furniture. And, I you know, I at one time I wanted them, and now I'm sort of glad I didn't have them.
Because so
then
funny.
I get to keep all the money, and then when I'm done, I can go, okay, it's time to go home, and we're done.
Exactly. Yeah. Now, do you find a lot of joy in mentoring him, what do you do as a mentor? Like, he just texts you. He likes the dumb jokes. Now, is he the actor?
He's an actor, but okay. He also does stand up a little.
Now, how do they find you through that process? Like,
we met through some other friends when I'd gone to see a one man person show, and the other girl we had met through the 12-step program, which I'm in.
Okay. Now, when did you go into the 12-step program?
I started in OA, went to Al-Anon, and then have sort of segued into Love Anonymous.
Now, was there a moment?
But I think of myself as a 12-stepper just generally. That's how I lead my life.
Okay.
It's very much the therapy, the religion, the way I like the ethics of the program, and I like the blueprint of it, and that's how I lead my life. So I don't think of it as all these other things. I think of it as just a way to learn how to behave, growing from a family who never taught me that.
Okay. Now, was there a defining moment that said, I have to get in a program? Like, I had a comic who said, I got arrested. He goes, but this guy was saying in his thing, he couldn't go into any place around alcohol. Well, as a comic, then he couldn't perform because
I never had that problem. I think I just felt out of control.
Okay.
And I felt like I was, you know, powerless over things, and I had to just, I needed something to give me some structure and teach me how to behave in life. I didn't know how. I mean, I grew up with yelling and screaming and inappropriate behavior, you know, that still goes on in my family. and it's great to talk about on stage, and it's great to see in a movie. You know, it's like Terms of Endearment, great movie, great characters. Wouldn't want to meet any of them.
Right.
You know, who wants to know those people? You know, I love seeing movies about people like that. You know, Silver Lining Playbook. Love that movie. Funny. Those people are mentally ill. That seems like my family.
Okay.
So where, I don't know, where's the line? You know, I don't know. I love to watch it, but I don't want to be involved in it.
Now, what were some of your favorite projects you've done? If you, I mean, or maybe your favorite comedy
guest starring on The Closer was really a great thing 3 years ago. I played this tough-talking guy who sort of Jewish-y. It sort of changed the fabric of my career because people considered him a straight guy. So all of a sudden, I got to do that.
Now, did that make you happy? Because you're an actor. You're an actor. I mean, I'm sure you want to. I mean, did it?
It's not happy. I love the experience of working on the show. I love the character. I love the idea that it was different than me. So different. He talked like this, and he was sort of annoying, and. You know, and I love the idea of being able to do that and doing a scene that I drove and get to work with Kara Sedgwick. Certainly another high point was doing a film called Coffee Date that I got nominated for Best Supporting Actor for the Gay International Film Award. That film sort of came out of nowhere for me. When I was doing it, it was a hard film to do.
Why was that?
I was working with some people that hadn't worked a lot.
Okay.
So it was challenging, and I got really, really great reviews for that. I did A Day Without a Mexican, another film that I played this rude restaurateur.
I've seen that. I saw that ages ago.
Yeah, yeah, and I play this sort of, you know, and that was sort of a lot of fun. Another film that I improvised completely.
Now, what is it like being, I mean, when you have to be rude? I mean, do you sit there and go, do you ever feel bad? I mean,
no,
I know
not
like,
at all.
How people are going to.
I did this in
you.
Another film called American Bistro. I did in November. I worked a week on it playing this art critic, and, you know, I played this guy, and I had this sort of voice, and I talk like this. And everything was very grand. And you are, I'm, my, the name of the character is Sheldon, I forgot how, the, I know how I said it, Crassus. And it was pronounced some other way, and I said, okay. No, I want to be Sheldon Crassus. You know, and I think it was Crassas or something, really, sort of really terrible. I forgot how they did it, but it didn't resonate with me, and I rewrote that part too.
Well, it's good though because you put your input in. Because you seems like you go by instinct.
Yeah, I mean, I can do what's written on the page. I've done that before. When I was working on It's Sunny in Philadelphia, they wanted it exactly like that. Which that's such an improv show. I was sort of because I was sort of surprised that I wasn't able to do anything.
Now, what episode were you on that? Because I used to watch it a lot.
I played the auctioneer who auctions off all the crappy stuff from Petty's Pub.
Okay.
And then I guess My Wife and Kids was a big jump for me to play the gay shrink on that show. And that I did 4 episodes of. And that was extraordinarily made me the sitcom guy for a while. That was like the top of, you know, Will and Grace and Norm and Three Sisters. And, oh, I did so many sitcoms. I forgot. I did around at least 15.
Okay.
Drew Carey. All these comedians were really, really generous with me, letting me have small parts on their show. Some of them were guest stars.
What were some of your, were you mostly in those playing a gay character or straight? Like I know later you play like the guy on The Closer was straight, but what was your...
On the sitcoms, mostly gay characters, I think, yeah.
Okay, now what's up in your stand-up world? I know you have something big coming out.
When is this going to play? This
will play tomorrow, Wednesday.
Okay.
Today, so, people, well, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday.
Thursday, the 28th, I will be at the this club in San Diego. So, San Diego people, please come out. And I'm working with this wonderful lesbian comedian that's open for me named Sarah Bulford. And Paul Laya, the kid that I mentor that just called, is going to do a guest set that night. He's really cute. And I'm headlining that club. It's called Martinis Above 4th in San Diego. And then on the 8th of March, I will be at the Boward Center Parker House for this big show in a theater with Jessica Curson. It's the two of us, a co-headlining thing. And that's March 8th. And then I'm going to do Vegas for the Laugh Factory in April. And then in May, I'm doing this benefit for suicide prevention in Cincinnati. And then I will. You can go to the website and get all the information, which is jasonstewart.com, STUART. And there's a page called the appearance page, and all the information's on there.
Now, a lot of times people screw up your name because of spelling, because it's different. Or
not so much anymore. Okay. more, I'd say 10% of the time, where it used to be like 50.
Now, do you still enjoy...
I'm so used to saying STU air.
I just get used to probably like, it's like, yeah. Or now, do you still enjoy doing stand-up as much as you used to? Or what is it now? Or it seems like you don't perform as much anymore, so you probably enjoy it
I work at the Laugh Factory here quite a bit.
Okay.
And I work at the Improv or the Comedy Union or the Haha or the Ice House, some of them occasionally. I feel the need to be funny anymore.
Okay.
It doesn't interest me. I do a radio show every week.
Yeah, tell people about
on Radio Titans called Name Dropping with Jason Stewart, where we interview celebrities.
Now, what's this format? So how do you get your celebrities?
I basically just call people that are friends of mine.
Who would be some of your guests?
Everybody from Michelle Lee to Dee Wallace to Shang Forbes, the comedian.
Shang's still on there.
To, Alison Ingram from Little House on the Prairie, Lisa Ann Walter, anybody who's a friend who I think is really terrific. You know,
so what do you talk about?
It's sort of an actor studio esque show, and we basically talk about people we've worked with and the experiences that we've had. The first part of the show, it's four parts. I talk about movies, TV shows, books, records, things that I like and you should go out and listen to or buy. And sometimes the guest chimes in. And then the first part, second part of the show is we talk about their career. And the third part is, you know, maybe things that they've had to overcome, whether, you know, you're Latin or gay or Hispanic or Asian and you're black, and what that's been like to fight that in our business, that's the third part. And the fourth part is the Jason Stewart quiz.
Which is
sort of like the Actors Studio, but my own version of it.
So give me a question.
First is, like, what's your favorite movie?
Okay.
What's your favorite book? What's your favorite TV show? What's your favorite song? Who's the love of your life? And if you could be somebody, who would you want to be?
Okay. Now, do you ever ask them to yourself?
No.
If you could be anyone, who would
I want to be? George Clooney.
Okay, bye. Just because he's very hot, talented, and he's great
he's
looking.
Hot. He's has two Academy Awards. He's politically motivated. He's done this incredible work with Darth IV. He's done such brilliant films that I've loved. He's even done things that have failed. You know, one of my favorite films is Out of Sight with Jennifer Lopez.
Yeah. And,
I mean, there's a love scene in that film that is just one of my favorites of all time. He's got this integrity thing. He's got this, he's taken the Cary Grant thing way further, you know, in his career. And he's just sort of extraordinary. I love The Descendants. I loved, you know, Michael Caton.
I think he's sort of like this generation's Warren Beatty. Just that actor, director, producer.
No, I don't think so.
You don't think
so? He's more accessible.
Okay.
Warren Beatty would be on a show, and Warren Beatty didn't have the style.
Okay.
Of him. I think maybe he's taken Warren Beatty and he's made him. He's an accessible Warren Beatty.
All right. You know? Now, what are your goals for 2013?
I would like to get a part in a film that I have an incredible creative experience on that becomes successful and changes my career, so I can play the same part in big studio pictures for the next 10 years and make a lot of money and be able to work more with more talented people. That's what I really want to do, is I want the opportunity. I also, just to end this, because we're getting towards the end, I am the chairman, the co-national chair of the Screen Actors Guild After LGBT Committee, and we are in the process of finishing the first survey in the entire world through the UCLA Williams Institute on openly gay actors. So that will come out in the summer, and I'm a part of that. I'm sort of the spearhead of that, along with Duncan Crabtree Allen, who's the head legal counsel at SAG-AFTRA. And that's something that I'm really, really proud of.
Okay,
so that's in the next year, too.
I want to thank you for coming on. Now, tell people where they can find your radio show. Give all your info. Jason Stewart.
Everything is just go to jasonstewart.com, STUART, and you can find everything there. It's pretty easy.
Are you on iTunes?
Yes, I am.
Okay, so people look it up, people, you know, because it's always, that's what I love now. There's so many, and you're very interesting, and you have met people. I always love different shows, like Paul Gilmartin's show. Just a great, just different, you know, and I try to do that differently with my show. I just bring people on. I don't want to do bits. We just talk. I'm not everyone's favorite, but a lot of people like it, and I get a following. And that's why, so people check him out, because it's radio, and it's good. It's not, he's not self-indulgent, and it's not, I mean, he may be a little bit on the show, because it is called Name Dropping, which is a great title.
Well, we did it because I love talking about talented people that I've worked with.
Right.
You know what it was like, and what the experience was like for me. And it's all the stuff that I like to hear about that I don't want. That I'm always afraid to ask somebody when I meet them.
Right.
You know, what was it like to work with Faye Dunaway? What was it like to work with Warren Beatty? What was it like being on, you know, Mad Men? How did John Hamm? You know, what was the process? And that's what I'd like to talk about.
Check it out, JasonStewart.com, people. STUART. Check him out. Thank you so much for Jason. Also, people, follow me at Twitter at Cooper Talk. Also, my past episodes are on CooperTalk.net or go to iTunes or Stitcher. Type in Cooper Talk. One word. I have about 125 episodes up. Also, follow my blog, cooperthought.com. I write like 5 jokes a day, things I tweet. Send me an email, cooper@indy100.com. 5th email, I will send you a t-shirt. I have Cooper Talk t-shirts. I will send them because I ordered a bunch of them and sell them. I did comedy. So I have to get rid of them, people. And so, yeah, I want to thank you. In the next few weeks, we have the great Phil Hendry coming up. We have Dom Irrera coming up. Please keep listening, people, because I love doing this. I love entertaining you. Remember, I'm Steve Cooper. I'm only as hip as my guests. Follow me at Cooper Talk, CooperTalk.net, and please check out JasonStewart.com. Have a wonderful weekend, and it's time for me to get lunch. Have a good day.